I know exactly what you're thinking. How can we bring all of this technology onto your fishing boat? Is it possible? It is possible, and that's what we've done. Get ready for this episode of Dev Radio. Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Microsoft Dev Radio. I'm Jerry Nixon, and I'm excited to have my favorite evangelist, Joe Rayo, is here all the way from Miami, virtually. Joe, thanks for being on the show, man. I think, is this your first time to be on the show?
It's my second.
Your second time to be on. What were we talking about before?
Costa Farms.
Oh, my gosh, Costa Farms. Yes. That was awesome, by the way.
That was fun, and it was a great project.
I don't know how you do them back-to-back so awesome like this. I think everything interesting must be in Florida. That must be the trick.
That's pretty much it.
That's the short of it. Are you having? It's a snow day for my kids right now. They're not even at school. I suppose it's the same thing for you probably.
Yeah, close. It's about 88 degrees, 89 degrees, 100% humidity. So typical Florida day.
Got it. So definitely your shovel is being used heavily.
AC is being used heavily.
It's supposed to be 75 tomorrow. I'm like, I'm not shoveling. I'm just letting nature take its course.
That's there you
right.
go.
I had a quarter for every time I said I'm just letting nature take its course. That's right. Now, let's see. You tell me if you, let's see. You're an evangelist on the audience side with me, right?
That is correct. I'm on the Southeast team and go around evangelizing Azure and working with great startups and companies.
It is true, man. It is true. I love this motion that we have right now working with all these different companies because not only do we get to meet clever people like Jonas, who we'll introduce here in just a second, but it's just cool work. Like, everybody's got such great ideas, and then somehow we get to claim them. Like, somehow we're they're ours.
Absolutely.
Okay, so this is a pretty good project. Now, this is Fish Angler, and it's a pretty – this is unlike anything we've really talked about before. Before we talk about Jonas, before we figure out who Fish Angler is, tell me a little about how we discovered them. How did we run into these guys?
Well, Jonas, who's on the call, is very active in the community down here. He's actually a Microsoft MVP, I think going on 10 years. And he joined a startup that basically he's going to talk about. It's a cool startup. They have an app in the App Store, and it's fully powered by Azure. And we started talking, and we had this motion with working with companies. And I approached him and said, hey, let's do some fun stuff. And he said, okay, let's do it. And it was that simple.
It is that simple. And can we just talk about the MVP program for a second? There are so many developers that contribute back to the community. And honestly, it's like a labor of love. Isn't it? I mean, it's one of those
absolutely.
Crazy things. And thank goodness for the MVP program where we can at least recognize these guys and kind of, you know, put them on the list or whatever we can do to make it a little bit, you know, a little bit of pat on the back to make it worth their time and be able to make it so they're not in a void so we can recognize them. It's a great thing. I don't think people realize we have thousands of MVPs across the world. And a bulk of those are right here in the United States. Every state has MVPs in different, you know, specialties and categories. And all right, so we have Jonas Stavsky. Jonas, you're an MVP. Let's just start with the most important stuff. But you're also CTO of Fish Angler. Tell us you're an MVP. What's your specialty? Tell us a little bit about Jonas.
Hi, everyone. Jonas Stavsky. I am, like you said, an MVP, Microsoft MVP on Visual Studio and Development Technologies, I think it's called, or .NET. We change names.
We roll the dice every month. Yeah. What are we going to call it now?
In typical Microsoft fashion, very short and sweet, right? Visual Studio and .NET, Microsoft Technology. Anyway.
We get paid by the word, I always say.
Yeah. I started as a Visual C# MVP and kind of fell, you know, now it's a Visual Studio and .NET. But, you know, I'm originally from Argentina, and so I moved to the United States in 1995, and, you know, been also a computer scientist and been in the community and helping out and being part of everything, right, for and as an MVP for 10 years, like Joe said.
you know, the role of an MVP is pretty broad. I mean, one, you can speak at different meetups, speak at different user groups. That's a big part of it, right? Blog articles, interact with people on forums. There's so much that's going on with MVPs, and every MVP is a little different. They've all kind of got their way of contributing back. You know, it's not a cookie cutter sort of thing. It's really wild to be able to stumble on these guys and be like, oh, I see, you organize all this stuff and you never speak. You're super valuable. Oh, you never organize, but you always speak. You're super valuable. And it just kind of goes from there, you know, and oh, you know SQL Server so deep. I've never met anybody like you. You're super valuable. Or you have a gift of teaching, you know, that sort of thing as well. And so just one of those beautiful things around the community. Okay, Fish Angler, is the name that simple? Is it? Can I guess what this company does?
I hope so, right? Yeah. That was the whole story behind the name, right? And every company does the same thing. But yes, we're basically building a global sport fishing community, right, that allows anglers to connect with each other and share their experiences so we can increase their knowledge and the advancement in the sport. Okay. Right? That's the marketing spiel, right? We truly are doing that. And we're growing every single day. I think we are around 22,000 users at this point. And we decided to start by focusing on social. Yeah. Right? Because one of the things that we want to do and we want to solve is answer the questions of how, when, and where. Right? And we know that in order to answer that, we need to have data.
I guess you assume fishermen already know why.
Oh, of course. Everyone
knows. Yeah, right? I guess okay, so wait a minute. So you're saying just like MVPs talk to developers in these little groups that naturally form socially in different areas, fishermen do the same thing.
Yes, they actually go out fishing in groups sometimes, very close groups, but sometimes they go alone, right? So, and especially for people that are starting up or don't know an area, or even if they're, you know, if they're professionals, they might go somewhere else and they might not know what is being cut in that specific body of water, whether it's a lake, ocean, or whatever it is, river, right? So it's for everyone, and we're trying to appeal to the entire spectrum of anglers, from people that are starting up to people that are professional and know what they're doing, and anything in between. So I
move to a new state or a new area, and there's a lake down the street, and I'm wondering all about that. One thing I can do is go to the local angler store, right? And I go to the fish store, just buy the fish, or I go to the angler store, and I could ask that guy. Maybe he knows. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe they're his little trade secrets or whatever. Or I could turn to Fish Angler, and I can start researching because everybody around me is participating as well as a social event to be able to say, this lake, here's what you can know about it.
Of course, right? And now that you mentioned this, one of the things that we want to do is map the entire world, all the bodies of water of the entire world. That's a very hard
ambitious
thing to do, and very, yeah. So far we've mapped the United States, Canada, Australia, England, and we're moving to South America and Japan next. So, and there's a lot of things that happen around having all that data of the bodies of water, the names, the center, the points that create the polygon, as well as any attribute specific like description, or if it's salt water or fresh water, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of the features of the app are around that body of water. So for example, once you open the app and you go to the fish, we also have 33,000 fish species with a lot of scientific and food value and a lot of attributes for each fish species. But we also relate the fish species to the bodies of water. So once you open up the app and you want to go to the list of fish species, we actually give you all the fish species around you because we know the relationship between which fish species live in which body of water. And we know which body of water is around you because we have polygons of all the bodies of water. And then, and we can talk about more details in the app as we progress in the call, but one of the things that we also allow fishermen to do is to share their catches, right? Mm-hmm. And once they share the catch, they add a photo or multiple photos and a description. And the only required field is the description.
The required field is not photo. I mean, everybody. It's a photo right? of me with my hands, right?
So we figure that is not really required because that's going to be just a second nature, right? It's a sharing app. So, but if you don't want to, you don't have to. Mm-hmm. And most of the we have for a catch, we have about 60 to 80 fields, and a lot of them are populate automatically. For example, if you select a photo, we know your latitude and the longitude and the date based on the photo. Right? Once we have that, then we can go grab the weather information, historical weather as based on the latitude and longitude as well, and then populate all that from water temperature to the moon phase to the tides to the weather before and after the fork, absolutely everything that we are storing, so we can help the community later on answer the how, when.
So you have all these meta fields about a body of water, like, you know, depth, temperature, whether or not it's salt water, everything else. Because of those, you have all this metadata about fish, and you can say these are the fish that could be in this body of water. And then as I report that I caught a fish, you can validate to say, oh, yeah, that fish is actually – this is the type of fish you might be able to catch. Rather than having – you don't have to go to every – I mean, it would be impossible, but it would be awesome. If you go to every body of water and validate which fish is there, you can start using my claims as I start bragging about my fish catch.
Of course. And a lot of people use also the app to ask, like, does anyone know what kind of fish this is?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So the other thing that we are able to do as well is if you tag a catch to a specific body of water and also to a fish species, if we know that that fish species doesn't live on salt water, right?
Yeah.
And you tag the salt water body of water, then we know that.
Call them out.
Yeah, correct. Right? So at this point, we're not calling them out, but we are kind of flagging that as a, hey, be careful, you know, don't use this for machine learning, right? So
that's hilarious.
That, yeah.
So instead of saying, how is this possible? Oh, you could block that user. Liar!
We don't want to block users. No.
Put them on a special list.
And one thing that I forgot to mention, right? And you said, when we started talking about this, we said fishermen, you know, they go out in groups or they're very private about their stuff. They go alone. And a lot of fishermen, a lot of anglers also ask this question. It's like, hey, I don't want to give away my spots.
Yeah. So I'll put a picture in, but don't take my longitude and latitude, right?
And that is totally fine because we allow you to make that private, right?
Yeah.
So you can say, I caught this in, you know, the North Atlantic Ocean or Lake Okeechobee or such and such river or lake.
North America.
Earth.
Don't give up my exact, you know, position, right? And we don't, and we respect privacy very, very much. So you can use it to share it with the entire world, entire fish angler community, or you can use it for your own, your own catches.
Think about how valuable that is. I mean, what the number one question, you go to a place, not only what fish is it, not only where are they, but which fly is working, you know, I mean, how do I lay it down? All these questions that, you know, every fisherman's trying to work. You could save a lot of effort. You know, hey, I've only got one day to fish. I'd like to save some time and really start catching some fish rather than having one day of experiment and one day of actually pulling them in. So that's pretty cool, too.
It's funny, Jerry. Joe, have you been sitting in our meetings?
No. Is it?
Man, because actually one of the attributes that we also hold is what kind of lure you use, what kind of rig you use, right? And there's this whole thing in the industry that everyone's lures is better than everyone else's, right? And now we actually know.
What beer are you drinking? I mean, it's all kinds of stuff.
Absolutely. That should definitely be added.
Yeah, exactly. Joe, I got the gist of all this. Talk to me about the technology just a little bit.
So what was great is before we even started working together on this, Jonas built everything using Xamarin so that he can have one code base. It's cross-platform. So it's right now it's iOS and it's Android. Eventually, hopefully, there'll be a Windows app version. But the great thing is behind the scenes, it's fully powered by Azure. So, you know, he walked me through. It's using Azure Table Storage, DocumentDB, web apps. They're using VMs, like he mentioned earlier.
Wait, Joe, I got to interrupt you. Okay. Let's just talk about the elephant in the room here. So he has an iOS, Android, and not a Windows application. And I'm sure a lot of people are like, oh, boy, I bet that's hilarious. He's using Xamarin. He's using Visual Studio. Guys, I mean, it's cool, right? You got to do what's right for your product, right? That's not what this is about. And so, I mean, it's funny because, you know, it's like, dance, dance, dance. But in the end, it's okay, right? I mean, a business is business. Okay, so, all right, we've got this Xamarin application that goes to two platforms I've never heard of before. And then on the back end, he's using Azure. And you said DocumentDB. Keep going. I want to hear the whole layout.
So he's using everything, DocumentDB, blob storage, table storage, with a VM thing. So one thing I'll have Jonas talk about in a little bit, like he mentioned all this geographic data he's using. He had talked to me about something great he did where through Azure, he's able to scale up these VMs to massive size to import all this data, crunch the data, and then scale the VMs back down so he's only, charged for what he needs. So, and then specifically, we built a bunch of Azure functions as a proof of concept in the hackathon that we did. So he's pretty much using just about every Azure service
there is.
He's
leading Azure these days,
pretty much.
But not only Windows and Microsoft, right? We're also using Linux VMs and PostgreSQL.
You didn't have to mention that, Jonas. Talk about a sore spot. No, only kidding. Only kidding. Linux on Azure, still a win. I'm only kidding. All right, Jonas, I hear all the pieces. This seems like a lot of moving parts. Like on the big scale of things, how sophisticated is this?
It's actually, everything is a balance, right? Our goal is to have 3 million users. And
you got to scale.
Correct. So we are architecting in such a way that we can scale without breaking the bank. But there's a balance, right? It's like we're not 3 million users yet. So we're trying to find a balance where we keep simplicity, but at the same time we're able to scale very well. And I think we're hitting that spot pretty nicely. So definitely our architecture is not the typical SQL Server website or relational database and MVC or whatever you want to throw in there, Node, right? It's not typical. It's much, much, much complex. We do a lot of caching. We do a lot of pre-processing. We have, like I mentioned, we have SQL Server. We have PostgreSQL. We also have DocumentDB. We have Azure Table Storage. We have Redis. We're all over the place, right? And every time we add something new, it's the same question. Where do we put it?
Now, Jonas, let's talk about this for a second. So with all of these parts, and I understand, actually, there's a difference between an app and a real app, right? I mean, there totally is. And you've got to have all these mechanisms in place so that you can start sliding the scale and you can go up as much as you need to. So now I have all of the things in place. I have my table storage. I have my DocumentDB. I'm using Redis for this, and I'm using functions for that, and I'm using VMs for this. All these things across the line. I want to dial this down as quietly as possible because, whatever, right? Nobody's fishing today or whatever. I'm really early in my product cycle. How much can you drop it down so that this is an affordable MVP?
At this moment, we don't even have to dial it down. Sometimes we have to dial up, right? So we are pretty stable right now, but forget about it, man. In the old days, this would have been hundreds of thousands of dollars on hardware.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think we are, I don't know if it's okay to, we're in the low thousands, right?
Yeah.
We're in the low thousands in terms of Azure, and we're using, we have multiple web apps. First of all, we have three environments. We have dev, QA, and production. And QA, we call it staging. Staging and production, they're exactly the same. And dev, of course, it's only the dev team working on it, so we don't need everything else. But we have five websites, not a single VM with all the websites, but five different ones. We have cloud services. We have SQL Server. Like I mentioned, we have so many different resources in Azure that we're using in different, what are they called, features or services, right? And we're nowhere, we're fine. It's totally fine. It's scaling nice. Of course, we run into some scaling issues, and most of the time it's either an architecture or a development issue that we solve really easily. But so far, we haven't had the need to, scale that much. We did. Mm-hmm. We have, but I mean, it's great. And as Joe
Let's talk about some of the components and kind of how you use them, right? You don't have to tell us all your secret sauce, but give me the gist of what's going on. Because I know you have blob storage, table storage, and DocumentDB storage, right? Tell me the sorts of things you're storing. Tell me how you're – I assume blob storage is for images and stuff like that that you have inside your application, and images I upload when I'm, you know, bragging about my fish. Any other sorts of things that you're leveraging for blob, or is it just for images?
No, right now it's only images, the blob.
Yeah, that's standard, right? And then what – now table and DocumentDB, I can in my mind, I'm like, can't you just pick one? How did you split it out like that?
Right. So Azure Table Storage is incredible fast. I mean, super, super fast. But it's also very limiting, and that's why it's so fast. Because there's so many wells and whistles. So we use it – in our case, we use Azure Table Storage to index, for example, the home feed, right? Your home feed. So when you log in – to your Fish Angler account, the first thing you see is the home feed, which is what people that you follow, or fish species that you follow, or bodies of water that you follow, or people that are fishing stuff that we think you might like.
Yeah.
There's a home feed for that. And instead of calculating that on the fly, we pre-calculate it every time someone creates a post. And we create an index. So every single user has a home feed pre-calculated, and that is stored on Azure Table Storage. Right. So that is very expensive.
Wait, this is awesome, because I think a lot of developers don't actually know that most websites do it this way. And so here I am. I'm Jerry. I'm about to go into Fish Angler, and I have my own feed of things. And when I go in, you're not calling out and say, hey, what's interesting to Jerry? You've already figured out what's interesting to Jerry because you know my profile. You know all the stuff. And you've already dumped static HTML, I guess it's static HTML, you tell me, static data, right, sitting there in table storage so that when it's time for me to see my feed, it's like data render, right?
Correct. Right. So it is not HTML, but it's just rows on a table. It's just pure data with IDs of where it is. Sure. And then we grab that that information. We go to DocumentDB where all the data is stored. And we create everything that the app needs to render correctly, like the media URL, the username, the date, and everything else specific to that catch or post, because we also have more than catches. And then we send it back. But there's about depending on the home feed that you're seeing, there's about another 5 to 7 calls to DocumentDB. Mostly DocumentDB to grab more information and send it back. The biggest thing is that we do not calculate on the fly what you should be seeing, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I understand why. And I understand why completely, right? Especially from a scaling perspective. But from a scaling perspective, what was your goal? 30 million users?
3 million.
300 million users. So So 3 million pre-cached data sets in table storage is where you're headed, right? And that is, are you going to invent a heuristic that says, except for Jerry, because he only logs in once a month, or are you just going to roll with it, or what do you feel?
So, man, Jerry, have you been sitting in our meetings?
Jonas, I hate to tell you this, but every company is about the same.
we're actually, like I told you, right, everything is in balance. So right now, what we decided to go with was every single user gets a feed, right? But now we're running into the problem. We're getting big. We're getting more and more users, and we're running into some limitations, right? Connections and whatnot. So yes, that's actually what's coming next. One of the things that we want to do next is we want to start creating the feed for active users much faster than for, you know, dormant users, right?
So
Still, it's not that we're going to postpone it to create it in a week or so. It's just not going to have a priority as an active user will do, right? So, and who knows? Maybe the next step is to start sharding
The next step is ML. The next step is ML, where I can forecast the next time you're going to probably log on to my application based. The best indicator of the future is the past, right?
Right. And we're not quite there yet. We're at the stage of collecting data, right?
Yeah, we're at the stage of daydreaming about it, right? I'm with you. I'm with you. So I interrupted you, but you were to a point where you were going to start containerizing it, maybe put it into different groups, hot and cold storage sort of things. And I think that's the way everybody has to go. You know, I mean, my mom logs into Twitter once in a lifetime, and it would not make sense for Twitter to cache her feed ever, right? And so they figured that out the same way you figured it out. I log in every day, and so I get it as well, right? And so that it you just have to be able to handle that. They're a little more than 3 million users, so I'm sure they've had to think about this too.
Oh, I'm sure. Yes, yes. So again, balance.
I love
it. We're not quite there yet, and that's how we roll. We get it out. We test it. There's problems. You know, we are releasing every 2 to 3 weeks code on new releases of the apps, both iOS and Android, same day, right? Thank you, Samarin. and not many people can say that, right? So right. That's awesome. As well as a server side, right? And server side, it's incredibly complex.
All right, let's back up. So I follow the logic and I understand the reasoning. So I've got table storage, our fastest storage, period, right? And it makes sense to use it like a cache. What are you doing over in DocumentDB? Our JSON store, basically, our NoSQL JSON right. store.
DocumentDB, NoSQL document storage. There you go. Said it right. So we are storing most of our data. And I say most because if it's highly hierarchical, we go relational, like our fish species, for example, and stuff that doesn't need to be accessed extremely fast and very often because we cache on the client side, then the caches, the users, things that we need extremely fast retrieval times, we cache it as a JSON object in DocumentDB. And again, we chose to have different containers or different collections, like it's called on DocumentDB,
so
we scale them separately, right? We decided that we're okay by paying, and there was no need to do this, but we decided that at this moment, because we did want to, if needed, move that dial up to scale and not break the bank, that maybe the caches collection can be scaled up and not the users. Right.
Oh, sure.
Right, but DocumentDB it really allows you to have a single collection that you can scale up for everyone, right? And we decided to not go
break
down
it apart.
Backwards.
Yeah. Okay, I got it. So you put all the cache data in a limited table store, right? I mean, it's limiting what you can do. Then you have this nice indexed NoSQL, really nice DocumentDB where basically you've pre-made all your joins. You know, so you don't have to pay that cost when you're getting it. But then the data itself, I guess that's a somewhat of a copy then of what you have relationally. Are you using Azure SQL or something else in your VM or something like that?
Yes. So just to clarify, our real data is on DocumentDB. Most of it is on DocumentDB.
Okay.
On Azure Table Storage, it's our index of your, for example, your home feed, which has some data that is cached, but not everything, right? Because if you have pre-cached data, then you have the problem of what happens if the data changes, right? Mm-hmm. So now you have to go back and modify that data, and that is expensive, right?
Yeah.
So again, we balance of what we cache and wouldn't cache, and then we go into DocumentDB to get the actual live, real data. So,
okay. I mean, clearly, there's been a dirty whiteboard with all this stuff. I mean, you have thought this through. Because there's a lot of moving parts here. Now, let me back up. Joe, tell me how functions come into this.
Okay, well, really pretty easy. So we got as you know, we do a lot of these internal partner hackfests around these engagements. And someone had reached out to me and said, hey, do you have any partners that would want to fly out to San Francisco and work on some Azure functions or some app services? And I immediately thought of Jonas and called him and said, hey, let's add some functions to your app and, you know, extend some functionality. And he's like, oh, I've been wanting to do something with that. He's like, but why the heck do we have to go to San Francisco? And I said, well, why not? So we ended up doing an internal hackathon. And basically, we use the functions to do a couple things. One, to take care of some maintenance tasks, like nightly maintenance tasks, like First one was just something simple to where we needed to clear, what was it, refresh tokens for authentication. So basically, there's a token that's stored that eventually expired, and there was no need for him to keep all these expired tokens in the database. So we basically built a simple function that ran every night and deleted all of the expired tokens. So that was the first one, simple maintenance.
So simple trigger with a time, or sorry, simple function with a time trigger.
Exactly. And it just runs every night, goes to the database, get me all the records that are older than today's date or have a refresh token, something like that, and then deletes them. Real simple.
Joe, don't keep going, because it's okay. Hilarious how this and that's all we did. But that's you just like solved a huge pain point for a lot of developers on the web.
Right.
They're like, "Well, how do I do this time thing? Am I going to need a VM with a service that blah 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 blah?" Like,
right.
Yeah, you will, unless you use a time function, right? And it's just sitting there, tiny, costs you barely anything, gets the job done, and it's low tech, super low tech. And you can write the whole thing in C# if you love .NET.
Yep, absolutely. You can write it C#, Node, a bunch of different languages, and the main attraction to it as well is cost. He's only getting billed for it when it's running. So, if it only runs once a day, he's not paying for it to sit there idle. He's only paying when it actually executes. And then if for any reason he does need to run it 10 times a day or 1,000 times a day, it auto scales. So all that is taken away, so he doesn't have to worry about it.
Okay, now tell me the next one. You thought that was awesome. Wait till you hear the next use.
So then we did two other things. So the one I worked a lot on with one of the other developers, Anastasia, on the TED team was there as well, was an issue that he was having with people that when they would post a catch or, like, let's say a group of people or whatnot, the fish or the person may not be in the dead center of the picture, and what would happen is the app would crop the picture, and then the person would be gone out of the picture because they'd have to crop it for it to fit on the phone. So we're like, okay, let's do something fun. Let's every time an image is stored and uploaded to Blob Storage, made a Blob trigger that sends it out to our Cognitive Services Face API, grabs the location of all the faces in the image, and then sends that to another function, which then updates the document DB that he was talking about. So then when he goes to crop it on his app, it looks for the coordinates of all the faces and makes sure that the crop box is outside of all those coordinates so that there's no more missing faces.
Wow.
Pretty cool.
What a gorgeous feature. Yes. Yeah. That is
really
fantastic.
So
if we need the fish API to find where the fish
much.
Is.
Absolutely. That's something
next.
That's next.
About.
That's right. That's it. Hey, released. Right, announced here.
exactly. So that one was a Blob trigger, which is great. So for those who don't know, it's a simple, basically, it monitors a container in Blob Storage, and anytime anything new gets added to it, it automatically grabs it. So again, he's only being charged when something's being uploaded or put onto that blob. And then that then passed to one that just was a HTTP request. So real simple.
Oh, simple. It's like the Azure queue, only it's with blobs.
Exactly. And then the last one that Jonas worked on a bit more, which you might have to expand on, was you worked on with Zane, another person on the TED team, was to replace or help out the home feed generator. Was that what it was?
Correct. So right now we have a cloud service, a worker role that actually creates, it kicks off when there is an item in the queue, and that item in the queue gets added whenever there's a new post, right? And then this worker role grabs that item and actually creates the home feed, goes and see, figures out who follows this user or this fish species or whatever our algorithm is that needs to know who needs to see this picture, and then inserts it into Azure Table Storage, what we were talking about before. So right now, all that's sitting on worker roles on cloud service, which they're nice, but you know they're so way, you know, they're so 2005.
There's no 2016. That's right.
So we worked on a proof of concept to create the same functionality on an Azure function, which does exactly that.
Nice. Well, do you anticipate your VMs will someday go away?
So we currently have, are you calling cloud service a VM, the worker roles?
Yeah, since you can RDP into them, I suppose I should.
Yeah, so they're kind of abstracted away, right? But yes, I do anticipate them going away, and actually want them to go away. And one of the things that we do have VMs on that we really want them to go away, at least from the app perspective, that there is no requirement of them running, is the Linux VMs, because they are sitting on they have a PostgreSQL database. And the reason why we have a VM is because there is no first-class citizen or a service, PostgreSQL as a service on Azure. So since we're all Azure, we have everything on Azure, we should spin off a Linux VM. And of course, I do not want to carry the beeper. I do not want to, you know, wake up at 3 in the morning that the VM went off, you know, VM or whatever. Yeah. And we don't want to Azure, right? We want everything as a service. So actually, we're in the process of moving that GIS data to SQL Azure.
Right? And using all the built-in GIS functions.
Correct, yes.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I didn't want to ask why you weren't using it, but I'm glad to hear you're headed that way, because that's a service that is monitored for you.
Correct. So the reason why we decided to use PostGIS originally was because a lot of all the open source tools that already exist, they're all built with PostgreSQL in mind, right? And we decided to go that route. Moving away.
Wait. We're coming up to the time here, but I don't want to pass this up until we go back to DocumentDB. And I know that you solved a particular tool that's now or a particular problem with a tool that's now open source. Tell me just a little bit about that. What's it called?
It's called DocDB command, right? And and the name goes from the SQL command line. I don't know if you've played with it before, but basically it's a command line that allows you to, you know, write select statements or even execute scripts against SQL Server, right? And you can automate it. And we have all this build process. We have plenty of builds on Visual Studio Team Services, it's called, I think. Yeah, Team Services. Yeah. It changed name so many times. But Visual Studio Team Services, we have a lot of builds, right, that we have running, and we needed to automate any of the processes that made data migration or schema changes. So we use SQL command for our SQL server, but we needed one for DocumentDB. And as a matter of fact, we were deploying, and every time we deployed, we forgot the stored procedure on DocumentDB. Oh, we forgot to migrate the data and run the script. But every time, and things were breaking, I said, that's it, enough is enough. Let's find a SQL command equivalent on DocDB, and there wasn't any. Right? But we went and built it. So we open sourced it, and it's on github.com/fishangler. As a matter of fact, we have plenty of open source stuff there. Everything that we use for us, we give back to the community, because we are using a lot of open source software that we benefit from. We want to give it away. But going back to DocDB command, it's basically a Node.js package that uses the Node.js libraries to communicate with DocDB command, and it's just JavaScript. You write JavaScript to execute, creating stored procedures, modifying your data, or whatever, and you can make it part of your build process, which we did.
Nice. Maybe someday they'll roll that into the product.
Who knows? Maybe they can use ours.
Maybe they'll use yours. That's right. You could inspire the team. You probably already have. You know why it's open source? Is because you're an MVP, man. It's in our blood. The technical need in the world is so past the capacity to actually deliver. If it wasn't for open source, I don't think we'd be where we are. And I'm not like, you know, an evangelist for open source, but man, I see the value. I see the value of like helping everybody else in the community. Joe, nice work, man. Thanks for being on the show and talking us through this whole thing.
Absolutely. This is a fun project to work on, and I can't wait to do more projects.
Nice. Jonas, I appreciate you being on the show. What's next for Fish Angler? You see something cool coming in the future?
Oh, yeah. We have so many things. We want to get into tournaments, the management of tournaments, because that's very old school today. Fax. But they use fax. Yeah.
Really?
Fax, F-A-X. Right.
Not CTS. Fax.
We want to get into fish identification, real-life fish, you know, real-time fish identification. So many things that we want to get on.
I'll open up my Android, whatever that is. That's some sort of device, I guess, and go to the Android store, whatever that's called, maybe Google Play, and I search for Fish Angler, and there it is, and I just install it, ready to go, create my own account, and start bragging.
Of course. Or you can also go to fishangler.com, right, and you have the links there to download it. So
very cool. Man, thanks for being on the show. This was very fascinating to talk about the architecture of this solution.
Thank you. Anytime. Thank you for having me.
You bet. We'll see you guys again.
See you guys.
Thank you, Jerry.